She was a beautiful girl, and she vanished without a trace.
People became concerned. Maybe she had been abducted.
When the governor's secretary goes missing, there are rumors of a double life.
She refers to him as a relentless, jealous, controlling maniac.
Does one of Delaware's most powerful men know more than he admits?
I really wanted to believe that she was alive, that what I knew would help detectives save her.
Imagine finding out that the reality is worse than you even imagined.
There were so many forces at play: sex, politics, power, money.
In depth, insightful, in a class of its own. It's America's leading journal, Vanity Fair. Writer Jeanette Conant reveals the secret of the summer wind.
Wilmington is home to many of the big Fortune 500 companies in the United States. It's this perfect town. It has a bit of an air of Southern gentility. And Wilmington is a little bit like Peyton Place.
In 1996, Wilmington is also home to Governor Tom Carper. Anne Marie Fahey, a Delaware native, is one of Carper's closest aides.
Anne Marie was Governor Carper's scheduling secretary, and she was very much the public face of Governor Carper's office.
It was the doorway to a lot of power. It let her rub shoulders with a lot of important people, and she was excellent at it. She had a lot of energy and a lot of presence, and yet a lot of that was a facade.
Anne Marie was a vivacious personality, but a troubled personality. She had undergone real tragedy in her life. Her mother had died young. Her father had turned to alcohol, so she had never had a true father figure.
Anne Marie was the youngest of this big, close-knit Irish Catholic family. And when their mother died, she made the older siblings promise that they would take care of her. And they did. She was held with enormous affection. And everybody said the same thing, which was when she smiled, she lit up the room. She was as absolutely tidy about her life as she was with the governor's schedule. She always arrived on time. She never broke a date. She wasn't a scheduling secretary for no reason. She lived by schedules.
The Fahey family had planned a dinner on Saturday evening. Anne Marie Fahey failed to appear for that dinner and failed to appear for an invitation by her boyfriend to have drinks at a local restaurant.
When she didn't show up that night, her sister Kathleen and boyfriend Michael went to her apartment. And the first thing they see was her bed was unmade. Clothes were scattered on the floor. It was just so unlike her. They found 12 unanswered messages dating back to Thursday night.
Her wallet was there, her credit cards were there.
They immediately started talking to her neighbors. They started calling her best friends.
Kathleen's panic grows with each phone call. No one seems to have any idea what happened to Anne Marie.
She was last heard of by coworkers Thursday and planned to take the day off Friday. It was very unusual to have her just disappear for days at a time.
Kathleen knew that something had gone terribly wrong. She called the governor's office, and he immediately dispatched a security detail and called the local police.
While she waits for the investigators to arrive, Kathleen Fahey makes a discovery of her own in Anne-Marie's living room. Three letters from a well-respected Wilmington attorney.
They found letters from Thomas Capano's law firm with his name on the top. Very intimate in tone. It suggested that there was an ongoing relationship between the two of them.
Tom Capano, 17 years Anne-Marie's senior, is a powerful man with deep political ties in Delaware. Capano is a former deputy attorney general.
For the Fahey family, it was shocking to find out that their sister had been secretly having an affair with a much older man.
If Anne-Marie didn't want her family to know about her relationship with Capano, what else did she keep from them? Investigators immediately go to Tom Capano's home to see if he has any answers.
He was rather forthcoming and helpful. I said, listen, Tom, all I want to do is ensure Anne-Marie's safety and welfare, and we'll be on our way. He did disclose that they were having a relationship, and he said the last time he saw her was Thursday evening. They had a planned date in Philadelphia.
He had also said, though I'm sure she'll show up on Monday and everything will be fine, and this will be nothing.
It was clearly understood that if, in fact, she did not reappear, that we would be back.
On the Monday after she disappeared in the office, they were just praying that she would show up, and then she didn't walk in.
People became concerned, well, maybe she had been abducted going into her apartment or something.
There were a number of rapes and robberies not too far from where she lived, so it had to be considered.
State police helicopters fly over the area surrounding her apartment, searching for any sign of Anne-Marie. They find nothing.
When somebody's missing, you always want to hope for the best, but a week gone by and there was no contact from her, no evidence of her phone being used.
The fact that this beautiful girl disappeared in this very nice, safe town was huge news. And it bled into the whole political coverage in Washington.
President Clinton told Governor Carper that all federal resources would be at his disposal to help locate Anne-Marie.
She lived right across the street from acres and acres of wooded land along the Brandywine Creek.
300 friends, family members, and political colleagues that had known Anne-Marie joined together and searched Brandywine Park.
You know, just going side by side, walking the whole length of it. We hoped to find something that could help find her. There was this real mixed emotion going into it. We didn't want to find her. Not there.
When they searched the park, the Faheys were basically leading the pack with the police.
On behalf of the Fahey family, I would just like to thank everybody for coming out and showing their love and support for Anne-Marie.
I think it was difficult for them to give up. We didn't find anything.
Given the circumstances, it all looks very grim to us.
With no forensic evidence and no leads, investigators focus on the man they believe was last seen with Anne-Marie, Thomas Capano.
That Thursday night, Thomas Capano took her to the Ristorante Panorama.
We traveled to Panorama Restaurant and we interviewed Jackie Dance, who remembers waiting on Capano and Fahey.
The waitress told authorities about how just how uncomfortable it looked. Very few words, no smile, no embraces. It was miserable.
Anne-Marie's family really suspected that Tom must know something about their sister's disappearance. They weren't sure if he had done something to her, but they were convinced he was not being open with the police.
Anne-Marie Fahey has vanished without a trace. Investigative reporter Janet Conant follows the case for Vanity Fair.
Here was a young woman who seemed to have everything going for her, and somehow she managed to become involved with this very handsome older man, and everything went wrong in her life.
Police believe the man Anne-Marie Fahey was having an affair with was the last person to see her alive. He is Tom Capano, a power player in Delaware's political and legal circles.
He was a Capano, and the Capano name was well known.
Thomas Capano was the good Capano. He was the boy that never got into trouble.
He was one of four brothers, and his three other brothers had all run into legal issues, criminal issues.
Lewis was really a very good businessman and made the family millions in real estate, but there were allegations that he had made dubious payoffs to political officials. And then there was Joe Capano. Joe Capano became obsessed with one of his mistresses and got accused of kidnapping her and raping her.
The real black sheep of the family is Tom's youngest brother, Jerry Capano.
Jerry liked fast cars, he liked fast boats, he liked drugs and booze. And he'd gotten caught with both.
I went to high school with Jerry. He was kind of a guy you almost felt sorry for because he just couldn't get his act together. He was the Fredo of the Capano family.
Tommy was the one everyone liked. Tommy was the golden boy.
I think family was important to Thomas Capano. He met his wife, Kay, at Boston College. They lived in a very, very large, elegant mansion that had been the former Catholic diocese.
I knew Tom to be a real family man. He'd be the last person in the world you would think was having an affair.
Nobody in Wilmington seemed to be aware that he was leading a double life. Thomas Capano and Anne-Marie met at a political function, and she felt very at ease with him right away because she had seen him in the governor's office.
They were on a friendly basis whenever he was there, and I think one time she asked him, hey, when are you going to take me to lunch?
First it was one lunch, then it was two lunches, then it was once a week, then it was twice a week. I think that she was always vulnerable to older men, to any kind of praise. And if you paid her attention, she just was drawn to you. She fell in love with him. But she was very Catholic. In her diary, over and over and over again, she says, he's married, he has four children. All of this guilt she had about seeing Thomas Capano was really weighing on her. She was becoming increasingly withdrawn.
A year and a half after the affair begins, Tom Capano does something that shocks everyone.
He told his wife that he wanted to get separated. He goes and rents this spacious brick home in this quiet, wealthy family enclave.
Anne-Marie didn't feel comfortable about the fact that he had left his wife. She did not want to be the cause of the ruin of his marriage. She had begun to tell Thomas Capano that she wanted to end their relationship.
Capano had to be in control of everything, all aspects of his life. And when he started to lose control of Anne-Marie, you could see where that would just set him off.
Police read entry after entry in Anne-Marie Fahey's diary. It documents how her relationship with Capano changed over time.
It clearly revealed that she was afraid of him, that he had threatened her.
He had broken into her apartment and torn apart the gifts that he had given her in a rage when she had tried to pull away. His obsession with Anne Marie grew and grew and grew, and I think it just took over his life. She was never out of communication with Thomas. If he wasn't calling her, he was emailing her. And he was emailing her all the time.
If you read their emails, she was trying to ease him out of the picture, but he wouldn't stop.
At this very time, she met Michael Scanlon, a young banker from a very close-knit Irish Catholic family. She told her sister Kathleen that she could see herself married to Michael Scanlon.
It was a very positive step. I think that made it a lot easier for her to feel more empowered to break things off with Mr. Capano.
The last entry in the diary is the most chilling because she says, I have finally brought closure to my relationship with Thomas Capano. And she refers to him as a relentless, jealous, controlling maniac.
Struggling with how to deal with Capano's intimidating and terrifying behavior, Anne Marie seeks advice from her psychiatrist, Dr. Neil Kay. Investigators learn that Anne Marie Fahey saw Dr. Kay just before she disappeared.
When my patient, Ms. Fahey, went missing, the police contacted me and I told them about our last session. Anne Marie was my last appointment of the day. She shared with me that she was going from my office to have dinner with Mr. Capano in Philadelphia. She thought that she might be able to finally set the limit with Capano and say, you can't keep contacting me. This has to really be completely over. I told her right off. I didn't trust this whole situation.
1 hour later, Tom Capano picks Anne Marie up at her apartment.
Thomas Capano took her to the Ristorante Panorama. It was quite a silent dinner. They didn't have that much to say to each other. Thomas Capano would later tell police that he dropped her off at her apartment around 10 o'clock, and she vanishes without a trace.
We knew he wouldn't let go of her. She was afraid of him. He had stalked her, threatened her, manipulated her, and refused to accept the fact that she was in love with Michael Scanlon. We were doing everything we could to establish exactly where Capano was for every minute of the day, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of that weekend.
Investigators pore over every detail of Tom Capano's first police statement.
He had claimed that he had bought gas on his way back from Anne Marie's. But it turned out the gas station was already closed, and there was no charge on his credit card. So they caught him in a lie there right away.
Investigators immediately tried to question Capano again.
Capano was not cooperating. He had lawyered up. He had multiple lawyers.
When I contacted them, I was told that he's not in a position to make a statement at this point in time.
The Fahey family issues public pleas for help.
We can't get on with our lives without Anne Marie until we know, one way or another, that we're going to find out what happened to her.
Anne Marie Fahey has been missing for more than 4 weeks.
With no signs of a struggle or forced entry, Anne Marie Fahey just disappeared without a trace.
Police suspect that Tom Capano, her married lover, knows more than he is telling.
The fact that she was breaking up with him after he had left his wife and his kids might have been the thing that finally pushed him over the edge.
Capano stops cooperating with investigators. the federal task force begins combing through Capano's financial records, hoping to find something that will let them obtain a search warrant for his home.
We started issuing subpoenas for financial records, and there was this entry for Wallpaper Warehouse on his credit card bill.
After doing some more digging, they discovered that the wallpaper store sold more carpets than wallpaper.
Capano had bought carpet a day and a half after Anne-Marie was last seen alive. We went back to the housekeeper, and we asked her, "You sure you didn't notice anything different? How about any changes in any carpets or rugs?"
She had not been asked to work that weekend. And then when she returned, she had noticed that the beige carpeting had all been removed and had been replaced by an oriental carpet that didn't quite fit the size of the room.
And then she said, "Oh, I just realized, not only had the rug changed, but the couch had been disposed of in the great room."
That was a eye-wakener when that information came out, because why is somebody getting rid of furniture? It was devastatingly bad for Mr. Capano.
Immediately, I thought he must have rolled her up in the carpet and disposed of her. I called the chief deputy of the state attorney general's office, Ferris Wharton, and I told him, "Look, we've got enough evidence that we believe we can get a search warrant of Tom Capano's home." When we knocked on his door at 5:45 in the morning, he did not take that well.
It's almost circus-like. I mean, there were so many people involved, and they were going through the entire house piece by piece.
We had DNA experts. We had the FBI's evidence response team standing back and watching, and then they called out, "I think we've got some blood here."
Investigators find 3 drops of blood on a baseboard, a radiator, and the door to the laundry room.
Finding the blood was a big step forward. We had no physical evidence until that point.
Remember, they couldn't even say for sure that she was dead, but now they had what looked like possibly a crime scene.
We did not have very much blood. We had about a speck that was smaller than the eraser on a pencil.
They couldn't even prove that it was Anne-Marie's blood. Her apartment had been so immaculate that they hadn't found anything to use as a DNA sample.
But we saw from her day planner that about 2 weeks earlier she had given blood. So we contacted the blood place, and they said, "Well, yes, she gave blood, but we shipped it out."
We ultimately tracked it to Europe, and we brought it back to the United States.
We drove it down to headquarters. It took them about 2 or 3 months before they came back and said that they had a match.
The FBI tests confirm that the blood found at Tom Capano's home belongs to Anne-Marie Fahey.
It was certainly a realization that this case is not going away. The federal government was going to do everything they could to see if they could unravel what actually happened.
The task force considers Capano the sole suspect in Anne-Marie Fahey's disappearance. But without a body or a witness, there's not enough physical evidence to make their case against Tom Capano.
The theory was perhaps he had shot her in a rage and then wrapped her body in the rug and then disposed of her in the landfill. They had no alternative but to look.
We went over to the dump where the garbage was taken. And for the next 2 weeks in August, in Wilmington with 95 degree temperatures and high humidity, we had a cast of at least 50 people working on this.
We were all very committed to finding something. It was like, you know, it could be right around the corner, guys.
The dump is just massive. It was a frustrating exercise. I mean, we believed that an evil had been perpetrated, but we didn't have a body, we didn't have a witness, we didn't have a weapon. Ultimately, it was a futile search.
As As the months go by, the public pressure to solve the case steadily increases. Connolly and his team search for another way to corroborate the circumstantial case. They come up with a new strategy.
We thought it was likely if you dispose of a body, it was either going to be in the dump or it was going to be in a waterway. We quickly surmised that he would have needed help, and we figured it was probably one of the brothers. We tried to focus discreetly on Jerry. He's the one who had the boat.
Jerry's boat, the Summer Wind, he had it located out at Stone Harbor. It could go way out in the Atlantic.
But when investigators go to examine the boat, the case takes another surprising turn.
After Anne Marie went missing, we were able to determine that Jerry had sold the Summer Wind.
The Summer Wind was sold just days after Anne Marie disappeared. When investigators interview the boat's new owners, they reveal a startling fact. The Summer Wind is missing its anchor.
Once they knew Jerry sold the boat without an anchor, once they established that Tom and Jerry Capano were in Stone Harbor that day, their thinking was pretty clear. He killed Emery Fahey, and they had taken her out on the boat.
Connolly realized Jerry was the weak link.
Well, we were able to talk to people that knew Jerry, and we had evidence that he habitually used drugs.
We arranged this drug undercover sting that ultimately led us to getting a search warrant on Jerry Capano's home.
We knew that he was going to have drugs at the location at that time, and we found the drugs in his house and in a car.
On August 8th, 1997, the agents seized 21 firearms and small quantities of cocaine and marijuana from the home of Jerry Capano.
There were children in the house. Family and Child Services were immediately called in. Jerry was afraid he was going to go to jail. He was afraid he was going to lose custody of his children. Jerry was literally falling apart at the seams. And he went to Tom saying something like, "They're going to destroy my life," and begged him to turn himself in. And Tom refused and said, "I was there for you when you needed me, and now it's your turn to protect me."
We brought Jerry in and said, "Look, you're going to be charged and you're going to go to jail for many years unless you cooperate."
Tom Connolly is expecting that Jerry had some kind of role, but he never dreamed that he would hear the incredible tale that Jerry would tell them.
An intensive 18-month-long investigation has convinced police that Delaware power broker Tom Capano killed 30-year-old Anne Marie Fahey.
They ran this investigation the way you would run a mob investigation. It's a conspiracy. And the only way to break open a conspiracy is to get one of the conspirators to talk.
Lead prosecutor Colm Connolly believes that one of Capano's brothers knows what really happened the day Anne Marie Fahey disappeared.
We didn't know exactly what his role was. Colm set up the deal to have Jerry come in and give us a statement.
He might have been the black sheep of the family, but he actually had more of a conscience than his older brother. The tale he told Connolly, between just shuddering sobs, was just a gruesome one.
Jerry's story begins on June 28, 1996, a few hours after Anne Marie Fahey was last seen alive.
6 o'clock in the morning, Jerry woke up to see his brother sitting in a Jeep outside of his home, and he knew right away that something terrible had happened. Tom had come to him months before and told him that there were some people trying to blackmail him and he might have to do something about it. he might need to kill them.
I just blew it off. We think he was serious. I just thought he was blown off skin.
But that morning, when he saw Tom outside his house, Jerry knew his brother was deadly serious.
Jerry looked at Tom and said, "Did you do it?" And Tom said, "Yes. I need your help."
I told him I didn't want to get involved, that I have a beautiful wife and kids, and I didn't want to ruin my life. He said, "Don't leave me cold, don't leave me flat. I need you, bro."
They got in the Jeep, they drove to Tom's house, and Jerry saw in the garage a large white Igloo ice chest. And Tom said, "We need to load this into the Jeep and put it on your boat. We need to get rid of it."
And they drive down to Stone Harbor, which is, it's almost a 2-hour ride.
And they loaded this giant ice chest onto the boat in broad daylight. They took off as though they were going on a fishing trip.
They went out into the ocean to an area where the water is probably 150 feet deep, called Mako Alley. It's where you do a lot of shark fishing.
When the summer wind reaches Mako Alley, Tom Capano throws the cooler overboard.
They expect this cooler to sink into the ocean and never be seen again. But it didn't work. Cooler floats away. It's just bobbing at the top of the water.
Took my shark gun out, shot it once with a deer slug, and it still wouldn't sink. I maneuvered the boat back to where the cooler was floating. He held it next to the boat. I backed him. I wasn't telling him this for a while.
Jerry sees blood trickle out of the hole, and he becomes completely distraught. He could hear Tom grappling with the ice chest.
Tom's on his own. He pulls the cooler back onto the boat, and he takes her body out and wraps an anchor around it.
He could hear Tom vomiting over the side of the boat as Tom heaved the body into the water.
Hearing Tom Capano retch, Jerry turns and looks, and he sees Amory's foot sink into the bottom of the sea.
And he just turned to Tom and said, "What have you done? What have you done?" But he was in far too deep. Jerry just broke down sobbing. He knew that he had helped Tom dispose of the body. They dismantled the ice chest. They threw the pieces into the water, but they were not done.
Back on land, the brothers dispose of the blood-soaked carpet and furniture, throwing them into dumpsters owned by their brother, Louis Capano.
Louis came in right after Jerry and gave a statement, corroborated some of what Jerry had said.
"My brother Tom called me at my house. He asked me to have the dumpster dump. And in the dumpster, I saw what looked to be like a sofa turned upside down."
The realities of the situation was they were his brothers. They stuck with him as long as they could.
They understood it was either save their own skins or betray their brother. And they betrayed their brother.
Imagine being the Fahys, finding out that the reality is even worse than you even imagine.
As Kathleen Fahy put it, she learned that Anne Marie's last hours were horrifying and that her sister had been dumped at sea. There would never be a body to find. And it would never be a burial for Anne Marie.
A few days later, Connolly marched both Jerry and Louis into the grand jury. The idea is to get the indictment, run over there, put him in handcuffs, and announce the arrest.
On November 12, 1997, over a year and a half after Anne Marie Fahy disappeared, the Capano brothers testified before the grand jury.
While I'm in the grand jury, Eric Alpert was paged 911 by the agents who were tailing Capano.
They said he's getting into a car, and he's put suitcases in the car, and he's starting to head north on I-95.
We were afraid that he was going to try to flee. We thought that Jerry or Louie may have tipped Tom off that they were cooperating.
Colm said, go ahead, arrest him. Don't let him cross the line.
Police fear that Tom Capano, once one of Delaware's most powerful attorneys, might now be on the run from the law. Months after Anne Marie Fahey's disappearance, Colm Connolly finally has the evidence he needs to charge Thomas Capano with murder. With his indictment imminent, Capano loads suitcases into his car and heads north on I-95. On Connolly's orders, the agents tailing Capano pull over his car on the highway and take him into custody.
That morning after we arrested Tom, we were at the FBI office, and we were looking at the newspapers. All the newspapers talked about how Tom had disposed of the body.
I'm standing next to Eric Alpert, whose phone rings. Man on the other end of the phone is telling Eric, you know, I found a cooler out in the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Delaware right around the time Anne-Marie Fahey disappeared.
So I asked him, is there anything specific about it? You can tell me any real details. And he said, well, didn't have a lid and had two shotgun holes in it.
All Igloo ice chests of that make had a barcode at the bottom. And Connolly's office was able to trace the barcode to the sporting goods store.
We had already reviewed every single purchase he made with a credit card. So within 10 minutes, we were able to prove that Tom Capano had bought that fish cooler. Years had passed, so it wasn't like we were going to find forensic evidence. But the cooler is the ultimate corroboration of Jerry Capano.
On October 26, 1998, 2.5 years after Anne Marie Fahey disappeared, Tom Capano's trial begins.
At trial, I remember walking the cooler in front of the jury, and you really felt like you were a pallbearer. This was her coffin.
A hush fell over the courtroom. There was just the profound sense of horror. You couldn't look at that ice chest and not know that he had had to do horrible things to her body to force it into that ice chest.
It was just an unforgettable moment of incredible sadness.
The 12-week trial captivates everyone in Wilmington and the nation.
There were so many forces at play: sex, politics, power, and money. It riveted the country. When Jerry was testifying, it was probably one of the most dramatic moments in the trial. Jerry knew that his testimony could be used to sentence his brother to death. And as he testified, he kept looking at his mother, and she just looked furious.
Jerry withstood the cross-examination, and we had a mountain of circumstantial evidence to corroborate everything he said.
As his attorneys begin to wrap up their case, the defendant makes a startling decision. Thomas Capano will take the stand to testify in his own defense.
Before Tom took the stand, his attorneys, with the jury out of the room, got up and on the record said, we've advised him not to do this.
He started weaving this huge tale of another long-term mistress named Debbie McIntyre.
His explanation was that he'd take Amory out and went back to his place.
Tom says Debbie McIntyre shows up unannounced and pulls out a gun because she's so distraught. Tom tries to grab her arm, and in the process, the gun went off and struck Anne-Marie.
It became the Debbie did it defense. And so this sort of rocked the courtroom, but Connolly decided that they would just build their case, proceed as planned, and they did.
The gun that Capano claimed Debbie McIntyre fired that night is never found. And when McIntyre is called to the stand, she testifies under oath that she was nowhere near Tom's house the night that Anne-Marie was killed.
Tom Capano was just staring straight ahead. He showed no emotion. Debbie McIntyre was just one more person he would sacrifice for his own self-preservation. It was pretty stunning, but it was classic Tom Capano to blame it on a woman.
The whole point was to reveal his true character, and he did. He revealed exactly who he was.
Thomas Capano had been a malevolent presence in the courtroom from beginning to end. Everyone felt it.
I've represented a lot of people in my life. Tom's probably the worst person I ever dealt with. He's a man that had everything and gave it all away.
On January 17th, 1999, Tom Capano is found guilty of murder in the first degree.
We never had any doubt that that God and justice were on our side.
They were never going to get to see Anne-Marie again, but they could at least have some sense of satisfaction that the person responsible for her death was going to be held accountable.
Before we go, how would you like your sister to be remembered?
I'd like to say she was as beautiful on the inside as she was on the outside.
I don't think anybody associated with the Anne-Marie Fahey story ever could forget her. You just couldn't walk away from that story and shake it. She should have had a very long and full life.